It's lovely to be here. I've come all the way from Brighton. Just in case you're wondering what this haircut is about. Might be a new face for some of you people. Don't panic, the BBC invited me here because they needed a beige lesbian. So I'm just here to tick some boxes. Not your box, madam, just a metaphorical box. I'm half Spanish, that's what's happening there. I've got a Spanish mum, and she lives here in the UK. It's all very legal. She's lived longer in the UK than she's ever lived in Spain, but the brilliant thing about my mum is that she's never lost her accent. She's doing very, very good. She's doing that. It's lost a word she cannot pronounce. Lost a word she cannot pronounce, huh? My favourite word that my mum's never been able to pronounce is my brother's name. It's not even a difficult name, his name's Stephen. I don't know if you've noticed this, but Spanish people, any word that begins with the letter S, they struggle, right? So my mum doesn't call him Stephen, she calls him
Esteban.
What's his name, mum?
Esteban.
Is it? Isn't it just Stephen? Even if I know his name is my son, it is Stephen! You don't want to mess with my mum. She's not like British people here in this country. We can be quite passive aggressive, can't we? She's just a very aggressive woman. I don't know how my mum's never really coped in this country, and I think it's because, like a lot of Mediterranean people, she's quite loud. Yeah? She's got one volume. It's like this. Whereas in this country, particularly if we're middle class, we tend to be low talkers, don't we? We don't like to raise our voices, do we? Why? Because we've got money. And we just assume that if you are raising your voice, well, you're probably poor. Or worse, foreign. Great thing about having a Mediterranean mum is they feed you. Oh my God. She's always feeding. That's her way of showing that she loves her children, is to feed us. You know, I can remember going around friends' houses, you know, like English mums. Go around an English mum's house and the conversation with mum's more like this. I think you've had enough. My mum will feed you till you puke. Going on in my life, and my mum will relate it back to a meal that she's cooked. Do you know what I mean? Like, so good or bad, particularly if I'm depressed. If I phone up my mum and I've had a terrible day, yeah, I phone up my mum, conversation always goes like this.
Oh, Jennifer, my God, I'm so sorry to hear that you're having a hard time right now, but you know what? Don't worry, okay? I made a soup. Come home, you sound hungry. I made a chicken curry, I made a lamb tagine, I made a casserole, Jennifer, I made some tortillas, some paella, some curry, Jennifer, you love bit of curry, maybe some meatball, some pork ball, beef ball, aniseed ball, banana ball. You're a lesbian, you don't eat enough balls. Please, come home. Eat my balls.
You know, when I found out that I was going to do this gig, I immediately put together a message and I pinged it out on our family WhatsApp group to my husband and my children. Because that is the kind of rock and roll comic I am. And my son, my teenage son, wrote back to me at once, and his message said, "Thug life chose you, brah." And I was like, oh shit, my child has joined a gang. I mean, what kind of language is this? Thug and brah? It had two R's, but he's a terrible speller. And I was like, oh no. And the other thing is, I thought, this message is not for me. This idiot has sent me a message by mistake, which is for a gang member. What if the next message is something much worse? And that really bothered me because, well, this was my moment. I am going to Apollo. Like, if I'm going to find out you're a criminal, can we do it next month? So I wrote back to him. In all caps, because as a good Indian mother, I mainly shout at my children. I wrote back, this is your mom. And he wrote back, I know, gigging like a boss. Thank you. A boss. Yeah, B-A-W-S-E, boss. And also, please do remember as you listen to the rest of my set this evening that I didn't choose it, but the thug life chose me.
That's right.
So I have kids. Of course you love your kids and it's difficult to raise them. Small kids are very easy, I find. The biggest downside of having a very small child is they are very boring. Yeah, they want to show you they love you by talking to you all the time. But everything they know, you already know. I mean, literally zero value add in any of those conversations. But you do it anyway because they're your kids, you know? And you know what people say, small kids, small problems, big kids, bigger problems. And the reason is that as your kids get older, you have to discipline them properly. And I find this very stressful because I'm born and raised in India. So what I consider robust, healthy, high-quality parental discipline is frowned upon in this part of the world. That's not true. It's illegal. I know because I have checked. And I want to have really well-behaved kids, but that is no use to me if I am in jail. So, I have to learn what you guys do here. And the big thing here is teach your kids about action and consequence using a multitude of techniques. So you have something called star chart. You know what star chart is? Yeah, no, let me tell you, sir. Star chart is you find something vaguely not negative that your child possibly might be able to do and then work it into the conversation and give them a star. Thank you for not kicking me in the face today. Here's a star. And then the other one, action and consequence, naughty step. You've been terribly behaved. Kindly go relax on the staircase.
First move to our area, it was a bit shit, right? But it's got nice, it's got a little bit nicer. It's very slightly gentrified. So now everyone that owns their property, they go on Rightmove every day for a little wank. Like, ooh, let's have a little look at what our house is worth. Let's think of somewhere cheaper and put it in and see what we can get for it. Put in somewhere shit, somewhere, I don't know, somewhere up north. Put that in. And then you're like, fucking hell, we could own Hull. Disgusting. It's very vulgar. So I've never lived anywhere nice before. It's been quite interesting watching it sort of change a little bit. Like, first off, there's little signs that you notice when a change is on the horizon. Like, first off, it's the availability of sourdough. Change are coming. And then it's the pub. It's always the pub. You've got to keep an eye on the pub. The pub changes. Like, our old pub, it was a sort of working class pub. Old blokes in there, smoking roll-ups, buying and selling the odd gun. Watching Sky Sports, right? But they've all had to go now. They've all been kicked out and the pub's been done up. It's all shabby chic. It's all been done a bit retro. And now, you know, there's like pictures on the wall, old Polaroid photographs of working class blokes smoking roll-ups, buying and selling guns, watching Sky Sports. And you can eat there. You can get food in the pub now. You can get a rustic frittata on a distressed camping plate. Or like a pizza off a bin lid. It's great. Tapas off a plank, because gentrified people like to eat food from bits of shit in a shed, bits of crap that's sticking around in a garage. I've had soup out of a bedpan. Nice. I like it. You have to get a tetanus after you've had a meal, but it's nice. And parenting at Christmas time. I worry about my parenting. I don't know if I'm that good at it. I get into rows. I row with my kids. You shouldn't row with kids, should you? It's really frowned at. I said to my friend, I row with my kids. And she said, what do you mean you row with them? You mean you, like, tell them off? I said, no, because that would suggest status, wouldn't it? That would imply I've got some power in our relationship. But I don't seem to have any power. We were in the supermarket recently, getting all the shopping in. I'm quite harassed. I've got other things I need to be doing. One of them's like, no, we don't like pasta shells. We only like pasta bows. I'm like, it's the same.
It's the same thing. All of the pastas are the same. The pots and the bowls and the shells and the twists. What are you looking at? I said, you don't give a toss about shape when it's chocolate, do you?
No. It's not good. No, because there's no glory in winning a row with a child. Like, if you win a row with your mate, you then tell your other mate, don't you? And then you're like, and then I said, right. And then I said, you don't give a shit about shape when it's chocolate, do ya? And I said it to her face. Like, oh, well done with your six-year-old kid. Well done, Kel. And my son loves to play Snap. He loves to play dinosaur Snap. And he hates to lose, because kids do, don't they? Kids hate losing games. You won't meet a kid that loses a game that's like, no, it's fine, best of five, let's just go again. So I have to let him win, because I'm his mum and I love him in a sort of oppressive, clawing way. So I have to let him win. He'll lose at things later in life when I can't control that for him, but for this game of Snap, I can let him win, can't I? But it turns out that my reflexes aren't as sentimental as me. So a Diplodocus goes down, and then another Diplodocus, and before I quite know what's happening, I'm like, snap! Snap! Ha-ha!
I was going to be a doctor. Got as far as A-level biology, and we had to cut open a rat. Remember that? We had to cut open a rat, and I discovered I couldn't stand the sight of blood or anything vaguely biological. Just had to switch it up. I was like, Mum, I had to tell my mum the doctor thing wasn't going to work out, but it was all right. I said, I'm going to be an engineer. And my mum was like, engineer? It is on the list? Okay. And then she turns to my younger brother, you will be the doctor. And that's how it ran in my family. She wasn't impressed when I decided to become a comedian. That conversation didn't go very well because I was an engineer. I worked as an engineer. For years, I used to work for Otis repairing lifts. That's what I did. And my mum was proud. Yes, my daughter, she's an engineer. And then I left that and decided to become a comedian. My mum was not impressed. She's like, comedy? Comedy? What the hell is comedy? What am I going to tell my friends in Nigeria? Eh? Eh? My daughter is a clown. But luckily for me, within 6 months of starting comedy, I got on this talent show called The Big, Big Talent Show, hosted by Jonathan Ross, got on this show. So I called my mum, I was like, Mama, I got through to this big talent show, it's gonna be on TV. I'm through to the quarterfinals, and my mum's like, oh yeah, that's good, very good, interesting, very good. Call me when you get to the final. I'm not interested in this quarterfinal, semi-final rubbish. For the final. So sure enough, I got through to the final, filmed live on television, live. Jonathan Ross is hosting, and my mum comes down with her entourage, because my mum does not travel without a Nigerian entourage. So I do my set, Jonathan Ross is interviewing me after my set, and he sees my mum in the audience, which was not hard to spot. It was literally white people, white people, white people, and then a bank of African royalty just... So Jonathan points to my mum and he goes, is that your mum? That Gina's mum is in the audience. And I swear to God, my mum stood up like this. Yes, that is right. I am the reason the clown is here. I am the reason. I always knew she was going to be a clown. When she was three, I bought her the big shoes. So my mum only comes out for the big shows. She only comes out for the big shows. And in fact, my mum is here tonight. Where's my mum? Where's my mum? Where's my mum over there? She's here. Where's my mum? Oh, look at her, standing up. Look at her, there she is. All right, you can sit down now, mum. You can sit down now, mum. This is my show, mum. It's my show. It's my show.
So, no, it's really nice being married. I like it. I feel like it's turned me into a woman, you know. I know it's turned me into a woman because I've started buying candles. Bitches love candles, though, don't they? Bitches love candles. They're so expensive, though, the fancy ones, like the Jo Malone ones. I worked out it's actually better value and you can get the same effect if you just set fire to a £20 note and sniff a fig roll. Not just candles am I buying, though, guys. I've been buying other little bits for the house. I call them trinkets. Australian husband calls them great. Another bit of tat with a shit quote on. It's not true, they're essentials. How else am I supposed to remember to dance like nobody is watching? Unless I have a piece of driftwood to remind me to. Essentials. But my sister says the reason I like all this stuff is because I'm nesting, and she thinks that's really good. She's like, you need to have a baby. You need to have a baby so you've got something to look after you when you're old. I'm like, hang on, isn't that what the NHS is for? Unless the NHS is that screwed that by the time I'm old, you literally have had to give birth to your own medical professional. Push, push, oh, congratulations, it's an oncologist. Because I'm not sure about having kids right now, so it means I'm very aware of my contraception. So I've done all the research for you. So the pill, 99% effective. Condoms, 99% effective. Eating a large Indian takeaway and then going, oh, look how pregnant I look. 100% effective. But my view on kids actually helped me become a little bit of an internet sensation earlier this year. There was a thing on Facebook, I don't know if you saw it, it was called the Motherhood Challenge. So it's where mums were putting up 5 photos of themselves that made them proud to be a mother. So there were pictures of, like, little Ken on the beach, little Ken trying avocado for the first time, little Ken asking, what kind of a name is Ken for a toddler? lovely. Now, I do not have a problem with anyone being proud to be a parent. I just saw a lot of this stuff, thought I'm going to do the opposite. I did the non-motherhood challenge. I posted 5 photos of myself that made me proud not to be a mother. 4 of those were pictures of me asleep. And the 5th one was of me asleep holding a bottle of wine. Really, really silly, right? Whacked it up on Facebook, didn't really think any more about it. For some reason, it went bananas, right? It went viral, got shared a gazillion times, went all the way around the world. At one point, I became Woman of the Week on a Swahili parenting blog. And it was really interesting seeing the different responses I got back to it. So the first lot of people to write on my Facebook page were women like me without children, saying things like, oh, Ellie, thanks for giving us the childless a voice. I was like, no worries, babes, you're welcome.
I have developed a new hobby. Some of you probably already do this. I've started listening into people's conversations on the bus and the train. It's quite entertaining. And I was listening not long ago to 2 old ladies, and they were talking about what they would do if they were men for a day. And I thought, this is going to be brilliant, because pensioners are, by definition, bonkers. But I went out to lunch with a couple of my friends, and I thought, well, I'll ask them the same question. So my first friend, I said, what would you do if you were a man for a day? Without even thinking, she just went, I'd have a wank. Sounded like she needed to. She sounded awfully tense. But these old ladies, different generation to me and my friends, in their 80s, and one of them just said, Edith, what would you do if you're a man for a day? The other one said, no, in my luck, I'd get a Tuesday. And what can you do on a Tuesday? My second friend, I said, what would you do if you're man for a day? She just said, I just do everything. And I thought she meant like in a sexual way. And I said, is that what you mean? Like you just do everything. And I said, is that what you mean? She went, no, no. Just all the little jobs round the house. But I've been trying to go on a diet. I'm not really very successful. But I find that whenever I go shopping and I can't get into things, you know, when you try clothes on and you're the size you weren't expecting to be, I just come home and I put on a song, and the song is Big Girls Don't Cry. You know the song? There's a couple of versions of it. Big girls don't cry. Such a load of rubbish that, isn't it? Big girls don't cry. Yeah, they do. Cry because they're fat, cry because they can't get a boyfriend, and they cry because there's no trifle left. But I was on holiday in Spain last year, and I'm bragging, I know, and outside the hotel was a lovely pool, and I wanted to go in the pool, of course I did, but I'm not overly confident with my figure in a swimming costume, and I was watching the women who were walking in the pool, and these were like tiny, you know, these wafer-thin, tiny women. And I thought, I'm not going to walk in with one of them. If I walk in with one of them, people are going to think I've bloody eaten one. And I wouldn't anyway, because there's no meat on them. So what I decided to do instead is just to walk in with the children, because kids are all really fat these days, aren't they? If I walk in the same time as a 9-year-old boy who's got bigger tits than me, nobody's looking at me anymore. But like I say, I don't have kids, and most of my friends don't have kids, but I think if you ask any woman who doesn't have kids, what would worry them about having kids would always be childbirth. It's quite a reasonable thing to worry about childbirth. From what I understand, it changes your downstairs, doesn't it? It changes your downstairs. I quite like my downstairs the way it is, thanks very much. Certainly don't want a bloody extension. To change though, isn't it? Because you're forcing a person out. That's what you're doing. You're forcing a person out. I've never forced a person out. I forced a couple in. With a shoehorn.
There's other younger people in the room, right? You know what I mean. You have only ever known a time in your life when you're trying not to get pregnant. Or trying not to get somebody else pregnant. And I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but on both accounts, I fucking smashed it. I think it comes down to skill set at the end of the day, doesn't it? People are just good at different things. Some people are good at the violin. Some people are good at parallel parking. I was very good at taking the pill. Every day, every day, every day. Honestly, I used to think I was so good at taking the pill, I deserved a reward. Arguably, there was a reward. It was the reward of not having to watch Peppa Pig or cleaning up another human's shit. Tell you what I don't understand, right, is women who are on the pill and forget to take it. Don't get that. Because don't get me wrong, I forget things. I forget my keys, my wallet, the fact I'm married. Sure! But forgetting to take something that can prevent you from creating a human that could one day say, turn the machines off, is what she would have wanted. I'm going to remember that one, thank you. Obviously, it does happen, though. Women forget to take the pill, they get knocked up. Happened to a girl I used to work with, actually, when I used to work in an office, right? And we were chatting about it one day. She was so blasé. We're in the kitchen. She's just standing there rubbing her belly like, well, the thing is, I've just got really bad memory. I was thinking, that's funny, because every day without fail, you remember to steal my milk. Maybe if you'd strapped your packet of microgynon to my semi-skimmed. Stephen in accounts wouldn't be telling everyone how you trapped him. I think the reason I was always very good at remembering to take the pill, because I've been on it for so long, I was on it since I was about 16, and the reason I started taking it was because I was going out with my first boyfriend, Kevin Sutherland, a boom chicka wow wow. He was quite the catch. He had a Peugeot 106 and a tattoo of Bart Simpson, which I thought showed a great joie de vivre. And things were going very well between Kevin and I. We had matching bracelets from Argos, so you can tell how serious we were. And we'd agreed that we were going to do it for the first time, right? So I was like, right, I put myself on the pill because my first time is going to be really special. My first time is going to be just like in the movies. So the big day arrived, and Kevin, bless him, he made such an effort for everything to be really perfect. Like, he paid his little brother to leave the room. To this day, the most romantic thing a man has ever done for me. And he made a mix CD of all of our favourite romantic songs. You know, like Boom Boom Boom, Let Me Hear You Say Wayo. And as we lay down on his single bed, with his Liverpool FC duvet cover on it, the scent of Lynx Africa heavy in the air. And as Kevin took my virginity so beautifully and gently and quickly from behind, I remember thinking, wow, just like in the movies. Obviously, it's quite difficult to make eye contact in that position, isn't it? Almost felt like I lost my virginity to Stephen Gerrard. I'll never walk alone. I never will.
But, we've moved now. We've moved to a place called Pinner. We only moved to Pinner because the estate agent said to us, he said, oh, Pinner is a lovely part of West London. West London. We get Welsh telly. It's not London, but it is very nice. One of the things I like about where we live is it's very multicultural. I think that's one of the brilliant things about London. I think multiculturalism is something we really have to fight for. Like, the school my kids go to, it was very easy to pick a school for my kids because obviously we just picked the one with the highest ceilings. But the school they go to, it's a really nice school and it's very diverse. Like, we have a mum's night out once a month and all the mums from the school go, and there are women there from every economic background, every race, every religion. And we have a fantastic time, and the Muslim mums drive us home. It is nice. I had an incident the other day, though. I was walking down the street near where I live, and it was one of those sunny days, one of those days that remind some van drivers that women have breasts. You know, one of those. And I was walking down the street, and there was a van drove up and slowed down, and two guys leaned out of the van, and they were in classic kind of leching position. And I knew they weren't going to be looking at me because I am 44 years old. And in fact, my older friends, when I was turning 40, they said, oh, being over 40, it makes you invisible, right? And I have found, yes, that is true, but the brilliant thing is it mostly makes you invisible to dickheads. So it's not really a problem. It's a superpower, if anything. So I'm walking down the street. These two guys are leaning out of this van, and I see they're leching, but they're looking past me at a younger woman, a woman in her 20s, who is walking alongside me. And these guys do the classic thing. They lean out of the van, and they gave this woman a very detailed appraisal of her anatomy. You know, they covered all the main areas in bullet-pointed form. Very thorough. And then they went on to suggest what I can only describe as a smorgasbord of activities they felt they would enjoy indulging in with her were they not under pressure of time to get to the next plumbing job. So they did all this and they drove off. And naturally, I turned to this woman and I said, oh my gosh, are you okay? That was horrific. And she said, no, I'm fine. It happens all the time. And I thought, yeah, it does when you're in your 20s, doesn't it? And we were chatting about how silly it was as we walked down the street. And then we got further down the road and the traffic had slowed down and this van had come to a stop. And I think a few years ago, I would have just left it, said nothing. But this year, I thought, you know what? If I'm going to be invisible, you know who else is invisible? Ninjas. I'm going to be a bloody middle-aged ninja. I'm going to strike, right? So I went up to the van and I just leaned in and I said, oh, hi, guys. Listen, sorry to bother you. I just wanted to say thank you so much for what you did back there, because my son here has been undergoing a very difficult gender reassignment. Worried that it's not going that well, but what you did back there really made him feel like a proper woman. Thank you. I was delighted with myself as well. But what was really special was that then the young woman next to me leaned in beside me and in the deepest voice I've ever heard just went,
yeah, thanks, guys.
Beautiful moment. Obviously, it wasn't perfect. The only thing that could have made it perfect would have been if the guys in the van had said, actually, if your child is undergoing a gender reassignment, it's incredibly insensitive of you still to be referring to her using the male pronoun. They didn't do that. They just called us slags.
All of the parenting stresses me out. All of it. Like, right from the beginning, when you're pregnant, you've got to think of a name for your kid. You're like, right, we're going to have to name it. That's tradition. Going to have to give it a name. And it's hard to think of a name for a kid because that's their name. That's going to be their name all their life if it pans out. And I'm an indecisive person. I struggle to think of passwords for websites. And you get help for that, don't you? Like, oh, no, weak. And name names go in and out of fashion, don't they? Some names, they can be in fashion, but they don't come back in. We all know those names. And I tell you a thing that's back in fashion now, and I find it fascinating, is virtue names, right? That is back in fashion. Those virtue names is a sort of Victorian notion that if you name your kid after a virtue, they might live up to that virtue. But that's risky business, isn't it? That's hubris. I wouldn't risk it. You could call your son Victor. He could end up a bit of a loser. Ernest, he could become a bullshitter. Grace is an ever popular name. I wouldn't risk it. You could call your daughter Grace. She could end up a sort of galumphing oaf. Sacking her head on low beams. Falling into crockery at dinner parties. You'd be like, oh, come on, Grace. Do your laces up, babe. Stop farting. Prudent, she'll end up lip deep in debt, won't she? Chastity. Although my son is called Frank. Someone said to me, you've done it, innit? You've called your son Frank. That's a virtue. To be honest, to be above board, to be trustworthy. I was like, oh, shit, never thought of that. He'd end up an estate agent now, wouldn't he? He's funny, Frank. I think he's funny. I would say that, wouldn't I? Because I'm his mum. He's like, funny, my child's funny. Tell a joke. Look at 774 pictures of my child. But I think he's funny, right? I went to pick him up from school the other day. I pick him up every day because they get proper arsey if you don't. They do. They ring you. They're like, where are you? I'm like, TK Maxx, where are you? Oh, all right then, yeah. So, yes, I went to pick him up from school. And I was late, and I wasn't being very laid back that day. I was running a bit late, a bit stressed. I had my eldest with me. I had my mate's two kids that were coming back for tea. I thought we'd just get him and go. He's in reception. I was like, right, we'll just get off, yeah? But the teacher stopped me. She went, can you wait, actually? Can we have a quick chat in that, you know, voice? So I had to range my face into one of those mum pretending to give a shit faces. I said, go on, what's he done? She said, do you want to tell Mummy what you did today, Frank, or shall I tell Mummy? He's got upset now. He's like, you tell Mummy. I'm like, what's he done? What? She said, look, today Frank stuck a digit up the teaching assistant's bottom. I said, oh, well, that's not ideal, is it? It's very difficult to know what to do with your face. I was going through all the faces in my phone. She said, we've talked about bodies, haven't we, Frank? And areas of bodies that we respect. I thought now would be a really bad time to go, this is awful. I mean, this is a finger up the TA's. I mean, this is now they're teaching numeracy in primary education now. It's sort of like, oh, if Frank's got one finger up the TA's arse, how many fingers are still on the outside?
I am what you call in show business a triple threat. I do comedy and I do music and I will cut you. Just joking, I probably won't. It's so fantastic to be here today. I will be doing a little bit of music, so if you're a fan of NWA or Snoop Doggy Dogg, then I apologise. I'll be about 3 minutes. So this first song, this is about travelling on a train. Could you give me a cheer, Apollo, if you've ever been on a train before? About half. Okay, great. Lovely. Well, the half of you who cheered, that means you are my target demographic. Congratulations. So I'm going to sing this song. This is about the worst thing any of us can ever encounter on a train journey. Just before I sing it, I have had some problems at previous gigs, actually, so I just want to make something crystal clear. If you listen carefully, I'm not even saying the word Hindu. Listen harder. Hindu on a train. Hindu on a train. Cowboy hats and penis cakes.
Neck tattoos and big L plates, and voices like a foghorn in a drain. Hindu on a train, groping every passing male. I suspect you've been to jail, and God willing, you might all go again. And although I have so many things to say to you, I'm aware that there are six of you, and all of you have had more fights than me. I've never glassed someone, but I do know how. Perhaps I'll glass you now. Hindu on a train, you brought your own speakers too.
Brilliant.
To belt out Calvin Harris tunes. I mean, the maid of honor's clearly on cocaine. Hindu on a train, you see me staring and you threaten me. Then drunkenly you all set on me, and with a dick-shaped bottle take your aim. If you only knew, we're not so different, me and you. Just 3 months ago, my friends Hindu, we got drunk and we pretty much hijacked a plane. We were worse than you. We went down gay men, some women too. We got thrown out of Spain. You see, we're all the same, but you're not listening, you're bashing out my brain. Hindu on a train.